Missouri Summit in Rio, 1992. 172 countries came together in the United Nations to lay out principles and action plans for forest protection and sustainable development. Another thing that came back from Rio is the music you hear. Roger McGuinn's The Trees Are All Gone from his album, Back from Rio. Over the past 20 years, it's gotten even worse for the trees, lying in the path of an insatiable global economy. This week, the United Nations returns. After 20 years for another round, it's being called Rio Plus 20. Will the trees win this time, or the global destruction machine? Join us Wednesday, June 20th, for a bilingual Shift Shapers and Formadores de Cambio as co-host Daniel Kerbine interviews Marcos Arruda, economist who developed the concept of solidarity economy, professor at UNIPAS, International University for Peace, leader of the World Social Forum, and editor of the book, A Non-Patriarchal Economy is Possible, published by PAX, the Institute for Alternative Policy in the Southern Cone of Latin America. Durante la segunda hora en español, co-host Ricardo Quiroga entrevistará a María Paula Bertolini, bióloga por la Fundación Temaiken en la Argentina, making Rio Plus 20 produce some real results on Shift Shapers, Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. on KDBF FM 89.1, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. Yes, welcome to Shift Shapers, Polar Reversal Radio. Today, yes, as announced, this is the bilingual version of Shift Shapers, meaning that the first hour between now and 5 p.m. will be the usual in English as usual, and the second half is going to be hosted by Ricardo Quiroga and will be conducted in Spanish. And it is, and it's always an interesting time, isn't it? And it gets more interesting when people, after 20 years, governments, corporations, groups like the United Nations get together. You know, everybody spends a bunch of money flying in, a bunch of jets flying in, get together and do something they failed to do 20 years ago and have no hope of doing now. This time, they call it Rio Plus 20. At least there's the attraction of having it happen in Rio, which would be, by the way, Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. So, yeah, what is going on with that? It's actually a United Nations-sponsored event. And we are going to, during this hour, have an interview with somebody who's really just a fantastic fountain of information and who has depth, incredible depth. So we will have in the first hour, an interview in English with Professor Marcos Arruda, who is a professor for the University of Peace. The University of Peace. I mean, that just kind of stops you right there, doesn't it? University of Peace? Universidad de la Paz? It's called UNIPAS for short. And also one of the leading people in the World Social Forum, edited a book called A Non-Patriarchal Economy is Possible, and that in itself was published by, to give you a name of an organization, is called, for short, it's called PACS, P-A-C-S, the Institute for Alternative Policy in the Southern Cone of Latin America. And Marcos Arruda, one of the things that came out during the interview, which we're going to have the interview in the second half of this first hour. In other words, we're going to be going over some things that are background. What is the point of having a conference in Rio? Okay, what is the point of all this? It was an Earth Summit, which brought no results in 1992. Now they're going to do it 20 years later, and boy, by golly, this time we're going to have real results. Everything's going to be sustainable. I mean, like, we're really on this green thing now, by golly. Yeah, worldwide. It doesn't really matter that we get all of our money from oil companies. No, that doesn't matter. And that really what our job in the world as the United Nations, what our job really is to take over other countries and take over their resources. And the UN just finds excuses for that.
Oh, yeah, we're spreading democracy. I mean, yeah. Oh, by the way, there's a lot of oil that you're standing on, and that means that you must need to have your democracy protected. So we will invade you, and we will occupy your country and take your oil, and you will have democracy. Hooray! Hooray! Okay? You kind of get the picture of what's happening on that little set of plans. And if that sounds cynical, the fuel for that kind of attitude is everywhere. 20 years of failure from 1990 and presenting nothing new so far. The conference started today, officially. But there have been draft papers for let's consider this stand and this statement, and let's consider that stand and that statement, which offer really not very much. Here are some commentaries that we've been hearing. So at about 4:30, we're going to be going into the interview with Marcos Arruda. And then during our second hour from 5 till 6 p.m., Ricardo Quiroga is going to take over that hour. It will be entirely in Spanish. He has two interviews. He's going to be having a pre-recorded phone interview with Marcos Arruda in Espanol. And he will also be interviewing Maria Paula Bertolini, who is a biologist and an environmental specialist who is out to save a portion of rainforest in Argentina. She's been there for years, cataloging all the species that are in danger there. And she also is in Rio. These folks are all in Rio. Marcos Arruda actually lives in Rio. So we were able to contact him last night and pre-record an interview with him. Now, something I did not know, and this is your host, Daniel Kerbine, and you're listening to Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio, here on KBBF FM 89.1. So what I did not know is that El Señor Arruda has been a dissident, somebody who has spoken out against a dictatorial government. Actually, Brazil, during the 1970s, was a fascist police military state. And Marcos Arruda was one of the people speaking out about freedom and about what kind of a state do we really need? Is it really giving us what we need to be run by the army? And so he was taken in by the army and imprisoned, tortured. He eventually was released and then exiled from Brazil. So that was his story. And he eventually was able to come back, but only after a democratically elected government had replaced the military dictatorship. So it was quite a story. And that is described in a book that is titled A Mother's Cry, A Memoir of Politics, Prison, and Torture Under the Brazilian Military Dictatorship. And this was written by Marcos Arruda's mother, Lina Pena Satamini. And this is a little description of the book itself. During the late 60s, 1960s, early 1970s, Brazil's dictatorship arrested, tortured, and interrogated many people it suspected of subversion. Hundreds of those arrested were killed in prison. In May 1970, Marcos Arruda, a young political activist, was seized in Sao Paulo, imprisoned, and tortured. A Mother's Cry is the harrowing story of Marcos's incarceration and his family's efforts to locate him and obtain his release. Marcos's mother, Lina Pena Satamini, was living in the United States and working for the U.S. State Department when her son was captured. After learning of his arrest, she and her family mobilized every resource and contact to discover where he was being held, and then they launched an equally intense effort to have him released. Marcos was freed from prison in 1971. Fearing that he would be arrested and tortured again, he left the country, beginning 8 years of exile. There are a number of reviews of the book. Again, it's A Mother's Cry. You can purchase it. It's available on Amazon and a number of other booksellers. And it is it's a story that looks at the future as well. So another review has it, in this future-looking narrative, The imprints of Brazil's Anos de Chumbo, Years of Lead, 1968 to 74, are obscured. However, these two volumes on human rights abuses committed during that period are a reminder of a dual legacy. The negative effects of years of unconstrained police brutality still resonate through Brazilian society and the state institutions of coercion. Yet this very violence became the impulse for Brazil's inadvertent contribution to the development of both the contemporary international human rights regime and the transnational civil society networks that have supported and shaped the regime over the last four decades. Lisa Pena Sadamini is a middle-class Brazilian who was suddenly dragged into the nightmarish world of detention centers, torture, and official denial when her son Marcos Arruda was arrested by the intelligence service of the military regime in 1970. Her son had trained first as a priest, then as a geologist. Like thousands of his contemporaries, he quit and joined Popular Action, a revolutionary social group that placed young educated activists in the factories to work alongside, learn from, and help organize manual workers who were bearing the brunt of the military regime's wage-squeezing economic policies. A mother's cry differs from the many testimonies that have appeared in Latin America in two key respects. There are two types of testimonial literature. The kind that has tended to be published in English, circulate among solidarity groups, and get put on reading lists. And it is a selective life history of working class, often rural, often ill-educated people, frequently women. Their accounts of systemic poverty, exclusion, and routine state violence are mediated and shaped by the educated middle-class Westerners, journalists, or activists who interview them and edit and translate the final product. Lena's account, however, is similar to that told by articulate liberal such as Argentine journalist Jacobo Timmerman, who are profoundly shocked to find themselves the victims of state repression. One of the notable aspects of the authoritarian regimes that installed themselves in Brazil, Chile, Uruguay, and Argentina was their targeting of young lower middle class and middle class students, many of whom, like Marcos, had become politically engaged through involvement with student groups, the wings of the Catholic Church influenced by liberation theology, trade unions, or revolutionary leftist groups on the fringes of the mainstream parties. And it's also notable because its structure is a series of letters between Lena and Marcos and also the State Department in the U.S. So he went through a lot. The final chapter is written by Marcos himself and gives a grueling first-person retrospective on the electric shock torture, beatings, and isolation to which he was subjected for 9 months. By the way, these countries learned these techniques, though, from the School of the Americas. They were trained by Americans to do this. There was a CIA-sponsored school in Georgia called the School of the Americas, where they would train these torturers how to do these kinds of things. So Marcos Arruda was one of the victims of that school, indirectly. Electric shock torture, beatings, and isolation to which he was subjected for 9 months. This structure creates gaps and uncertainties in the narrative, just as Marcos' time in detention is full of periods of amnesia. And to have gone through all that, but come out and become actually one of the leaders in the People's Summit. So one of the key things, okay, the UN has gone in and said, we're not going to do much. They basically said that, okay? And one of the messages from civil society, from the World Social Forum, of which Marcos Arruda is one of the leaders, here's a piece about it. And this is actually from the Natural Resources Defense Council, a blog from Susan Casey Lefkowitz. Message to governments at Rio Plus 20 Earth Summit. If you are not going to save our future, we are. The Rio Plus 20 Earth Summit is a place of contrasting government inertia and public energy. Delegates barely managed to agree on a weak text that acknowledges the severity of the world's environmental problems, but doesn't do much to move us to action. Yet discussions all throughout Rio are filled by inspiring people who are fighting for their communities and for a better world. Just take Canada as an example of these two extremes. While the Canadian federal government tries to undermine clean energy progress, the First Nations leaders are showing courage in fighting dirty energy, such as tar sands, and innovation in developing renewable energy. For months now, governmental delegates have argued over and weakened the language of the text until it is almost meaningless. And among the countries weakening the text was that former environmental leader, Canada. Canadian environmental groups called Canada a major obstructor at Rio Plus 20, and we know that the reason the Canadian federal government has a whole trophy case of fossil awards is because it has become a petrostate, dependent on the dirty and expensive tar sands oil. Tar sands oil has turned the Canadian federal government from a leader to a pariah on the international environmental stage, even to the point where news reports of leaked Canadian documents affirm that Canada has tried to weaken the already weak language around the phase-out of fossil fuel subsidies, something that it had already committed to doing as a G20 member. But inspiration also comes from Canada. This week, which was Susan Casey Lefkowitz, sat down with Sundance chief Ruben George from the Tsleil-Waututh Nation in Vancouver, British Columbia, just across from where Kinder Morgan has proposed to expand a tar sands pipeline and bring large tankers into the Vancouver port. The chief spoke of how his community is fighting expansion of a tar sands pipeline and tar sands-filled tankers, alongside many others in Vancouver, while investing in a healthier future with wind power. Chief George shared the following. Sundance Chief George, Rio Earth Summit, June 2012. That's now. We are not relying on the government. We are taking the initiative ourselves. We are not asking for permission. It is time for bad energy development to stop. We are setting an example of the alternative with wind turbines and showing how we stand up for our land. It is beautiful to see that all First Nations from Canada down to Chile are here and all on the same page. This is a time of learning, not of conflict. We want to teach people that this is not just a First Nations problem. Just like with the civil rights movement, we have to get together and recognize that this is a problem for us all. Everyone deserves the opportunity to be connected and to love and appreciate nature. Our children, your children, even Kinder Morgan's children deserve the opportunity to love and appreciate what we have. Some of our government and industry are stuck in their dysfunction, too blind to see that they are ruining themselves. If they are not going to save our future, we are. We are here to network with organizations that have similar fossil fuel problems. We want to send the message that there are alternatives. Clean energy jobs are the future. This is the other side of the Rio Plus 20 Earth Summit, a side of inspiration, hope, and innovation. Sundance Chief George is one of many who came to Rio with the sentiment that if they are not going to save our future, we are. This willful type of action, fighting spirit, and innovation is a meaningful legacy of Rio Plus 20. Another very compelling feature of Rio Plus 20 this week is a group called the People's Summit for Social and Environmental Justice in Defense of the Commons. And here's part of their document. Between the 15th and 23rd of June of this year will occur the People's Summit for Social and Environmental Justice in Rio Plus 20 at Flamengo in Rio de Janeiro. The global civil society, organizations, collectives, and social movements will occupy the landfill to propose a new way of living on the planet in solidarity against the commodification of nature and in defense of the commons. The People's Summit will take place alongside the UN Conference on Sustainable Development, Rio Plus 20. The official meeting marks the 20th anniversary of the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development, which first took place in Rio in 92. It was also called Eco 92. In these two decades, the lack of action to overcome social and environmental injustice has frustrated expectations and discredited the UN. The planned agenda for the official Rio Plus 20, the so-called green economy, and the global governance is considered by the organizers of the summit as unsatisfactory to deal with the global crisis caused by the models of capitalist production and consumption. And Marcos Arruda in his interview is going to go into that some more, because he and this the People's Summit has some ideas on reforming the economy. And what they call it is the solidarity economy. To meet the challenges of the systemic crisis, the People's Summit will not only be a great event, it is part of a historical process of accumulation and convergence on local, regional, and global struggles that have anti-capitalist, classist, anti-racist, anti-patriarchal, and anti-homophobic political frames. We want to transform Rio Plus 20 in a moment of opportunity to address the serious problems that humanity is facing and demonstrate the political power of organized people. Come reinvent the world is our call and our invitation for the participation of the organizations and social movements in Brazil and in the world. The call for the Global Summit will be held during the Thematic Social Forum, and that actually already took place. And the Civil Society's Facilitator Committee for Rio Plus 20 is preparing the design of the People's Summit and the territory we will occupy in Flamengo. The space will be organized into discussion groups, and of course they are expected to, and they have already submitted a statement, a set of proposals, demands basically, and a position statement to the United Nations. A denunciation of structural causes and new forms of expanded capital accumulation, solutions and new paradigms, agendas, campaigns, and mobilization that articulates the process of anti-capitalist mobilizations after Rio Plus 20. So, global capitalism, the brutal capitalist regime written large and globally, is being very much put into question by many South American groups, but it's really being shown worldwide to be something that's not working out very well. And it has crashed. So this is a very opportune time to be looking at and proposing other sorts of paradigms and structures, especially when we're sitting in the middle of something that's been totally cracked apart, and we're just wondering which parts are going to fall off next. Did Greece fall off? Came close. They might still. Spain? What's going to happen there? We don't know. And that's part of the global economy. The solidarity economy is more like what they have in Bolivia, more like what they have where they are functioning and they are focusing on their own people, making sure that the people have what they need, that they can get an education, that they can have the food they need, housing. They're building houses. They're providing housing for everybody. There are no homeless people there. Things like that. So creating new models. So we're going to get to this interview. This was actually last night. It was about 11:30 p.m. Rio time with Professor Dr. Marcos Arruda. During the replay of this recording, maybe adjusting a little bit of the sound levels here and there, he had some difficulty being able to hear at his end what was being said. So he had not the best connection on his end, but we as the listeners have a very good connection at our end to be able to hear what he has to say.
Buenas noches. Hello, Professor.
Buenas noches, Daniel.
Hi. And we're going to be talking in English. This is a it's a bilingual program.
I know.
And so
Good. I just have, let's say, 10 minutes because I was extensive in Spanish. So let us go.
Okay. Yes. You know, it's very
it's a very brilliant person who can speak even more than one language. So you have Portuguese, you have Espanol, you have English. How many languages do you speak?
French and some Italian.
And some Italian. Very. That's very good.
That's much more than most Americans can speak.
Thank you. That's one of the privileges of having lived in exile for 11 years.
Really?
I did not know that. So you were in Brazil.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, here's what I wanted to find out.
Yes, believe it or not, that was when I first found out about Dr. Marcos Arruda's period of exile. And it was just, it's floored me and stopped me right there to understand and get that I was on the phone talking to somebody who had actually been through the eye of that needle, someone who had actually been picked up and tortured and then thrown out of his country because of expressing his beliefs and his beliefs in his countrymen and in the workers.
Did you get to go to the original Rio conference in 1992?
Yes, that's my hometown, and I was already back from exile 10 years already. I came back in 82. In 92, my institute helped organize the civil society participation in the People's Summit, which now is being reproduced 20 years later. And
yes.
We had a big focus on the global threats, not only of to the environment, but also inequalities of all sorts that afflict the majority of the peoples of the world. So these were the focuses, and 20 years later, we expected that the official summit was going to make a revision and evaluation of 20 years of international agreements and their results, and they simply canceled this item of the official program. And they are going to be only discussing the green economy and global environmental governance. I think it's very inadequate, and they simply don't want to recognize the failure of most targets that have been set up by the international agreements between 92 and 2012.
Right. So that is one of the questions that I wanted to ask you. It's really clear
that they set up all these guidelines and plans to have a sustainable world, environmental sustainability with development. What would you say has prevented the true sustainability during the past 20 years?
Mainly the yearning for immediate profits at any cost. I believe that based on profit motive is oriented to become monopoly and to do away with democracy. There is no democracy if it doesn't start with economic democracy. Capitalism is incapable of promoting economic democracy. Its vocation is to concentrate capital and to drive investments in the direction where money is, not needs. And what we need is an economy that responds to human needs in a sustainable manner.
And
so I believe that capitalism is unsustainable by nature.
Oh, okay.
And unless we change the paradigm of organization of society and the economy, the planet is going to really go down. And the threat will not only be to human life, but to life in the whole planet.
I don't see any sign of that changing in this particular conference of Rio Plus 20, certainly not on the part of the United Nations.
True.
They're still running the same plan.
That's why we are countering the laziness that is prevailing among the governments and the corporations who are running the show in Rio Plus 20 with a number of practical experiences of building another economy, another way of organizing communal life, another way of using money, another way of conceiving and practicing development whereby economic and technical development serves human and social development and not the opposite.
That would be solidarity economy?
Yeah, exactly. Solidarity economy based on communities organizing themselves. There is a very promising movement in the United States called the Community Development Corporations.
Oh.
I believe this is already a way of people empowering themselves locally to produce and try to consume as much as possible from the local production, being able to decide what shops and companies are going to be allowed in the territory and which should not be allowed, then having control over money transactions, savings, and money flows inside and towards the outside of the community.
Okay, so just in case there was a little difficulty with the connection, what Dr. Marcos Arruda is talking about is the solidarity economy is economic development serves human and social development, not the reverse, where we have human and social development being suffering at the in service and at the altar of economic development. It's totally the opposite of what we see in so many countries. It's totally opposite of what we see in Greece happening with the austerity economy. And also he mentions community development corporations and just plain old going local, doing local business. And that is where the solidarity economy lives.
These
yes.
Are very hopeful initiatives. Elsewhere, we have the International Movement of Eco Villages, which is making progress in many places of the world. I give you the example of Senegal. Where there were 14 eco villages developing very soundly with communities self-managed and prosperity increasing all the time. And the rest of the countryside of Senegal going bankrupt and being exploited by transnational companies, small family landowners losing their lands for large corporations,
mm-hmm.
agribusiness. And at one point the government realized that those eco-villages could serve as an example to multiply this type of experience elsewhere. And now they are putting together a program to convert 40,000 rural communities into eco-villages in the countryside of Senegal.
Oh, and when that happens, the world gets to see, the way you're describing it, it is a very striking difference.
Absolutely.
Listening to an interview with Marcos Arruda, who has a lot of credentials. He is at the Earth Summit in Rio, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, talking about the People's Summit and what the solidarity economy can offer the world in replacing the global economy. We'll get right back to that.
Whereas a corporation that comes from abroad, from the outside, they don't care about the exhaustion of natural resources because they go elsewhere, simply. And so for a solidarity economy, it is so important that people become empowered to be the subjects of development.
And it looks as though there is a moving forward of that the solidarity economy is being practiced in South America in various countries. Have you seen that? Yeah, I'm thinking like in Venezuela or in some of the countries that have dropped out of the World Bank. You know, they've dropped out of IMF.
Solidarity economy is developing in all of those.
I'm curious about the continent of South America because we're seeing countries that have pulled out of the World Bank and the global financial world and relying on their own economies and their own resources. So I'm wondering, so I'm looking at the continent of South America. It looks as though there are countries that have pulled away from the global banking system, like at least to the degree that they're not, they don't have IMF loans, they have their own resources. Do you see South America leading forward, going forward with more of this independence, becoming a really a force of very strong countries going forward?
Well, that's a good question, Daniel. It happens that there is an enormous amount of conflict within South America. There is a core of very progressive countries that include Bolivia, Ecuador, Venezuela, Cuba, and a few others, maybe even Argentina, who are trying to build regional articulations, regional integration programs. And they are fairly successful. One example I already spoke in Spanish about is the ALBA articulation called the Polisarian Area of the Americas.
I'm going to summarize a little bit. This is your host, Daniel Kerbein, for the first hour up until 5 p.m. You're listening to Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio, and we are interviewing someone with great deep roots in the country Brazil. His name is Marcos Arruda. He is an economist. He actually was a dissident in the 1970s and was actually arrested, exiled, tortured, all of that by the military government. He developed the concept of the solidarity economy. He's a professor at UNIPAS, the University of Peace. He's a leader in the World Social Forum. They have prepared a position statement and given it to the United Nations at Rio+20, which is the World Earth Summit, the second Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. And he's also editor of a book, and we're going to get into that, called A Non-Patriarchal Economy is Possible. And he is very active with something called the Institute for Alternative Policy in the Southern Cone of Latin America. So what he was just talking about is that when we talk about solidarity economy, he's got something where these eco-villages have been set up in Senegal. And Senegal, the country of Senegal in Africa, is actually converting its... They've done this with 40,000 rural villages where they're conserving their resources, their water, they're developing ways of keeping things sustainable for themselves and in local trade with each other rather than being totally sucked dry of all the resources by the International Monetary Fund. So one of the things that Dr. Arruda says is they have the money, meaning the global banking system, but we have the people, and the people are a tremendous source of power. And that there are some conflicts on the continent of South America, but there is a core group consisting of Bolivia, Ecuador, Venezuela, and Argentina, particularly, that have actually formed a regional trade, and it is called ALBA, and that is short for Bolivian Alliance for the Americas. So Alianza Boliviana, so it's an alliance for the peoples of America. They have their own currency called the Sucre. It's a new regional currency, and they trade with each other, and they provide resources for each other. They are also exporting countries, and they are doing very well, thank you very much, without the assistance or the draining influence of the global economy. So we're going to get back and complete this interview with Dr. Marcos Arruda, the University of Peace, and also the part of the World Summit He's at the Earth Summit anyway, and he is part of, yeah, the World Social Forum in particular. That's the group that's presenting to Rio Plus 20. So let's get back to that interview.
And ALBA is using a monetary unit to make exchanges between countries of that particular region. And using the sucre, it means they don't have to use the hard currencies of the north. They also intend to, in the level of UNASUR, which is the unity of South American countries, the intention is to create and to develop a sub-south bank that is capable of keeping reserves of all our countries in South America, using those reserves for investment in the development of the region, reducing drastically the need of external financial investments in the continent. However, countries like Brazil, specifically Brazil, but also Chile, Colombia, and Mexico, they oppose that either vocally or in silence, tacitly, simply by not moving. And Brazil, unfortunately, is not aiming at a real independent, autonomous, and solidarity-based type of development program in solidarity with the other countries of the continent. It is not planning that because, on the one hand, it is opening its borders always more to the inflow of international capital, not only investment capital, but also speculative capital. And we are invaded by transnational banks, transnational corporations. We pay royalties even to brush our teeth and to drink mineral water. And that is by no means a perspective of a country that becomes truly emerging country, industrially developed. In the opposite, we are continuing to be exporting our primary goods and commodities and relying much more on the external markets than in the internal effective demand. So in this sense, Brazil is not innovating at all. The only innovations that we find here are some social programs that have been effective in reducing extreme poverty in the country. But that's very little compared to what we need. What we need is a profound change of the way of organizing the economy, property management, and economic and political power.
Professor Marcos Arruda, you edited the book A Non-Patriarchal Economy is Possible. Is that part of the patriarchal economy that you're referring to there? Is it's so dependent on some other big country? Is that part of it, or is there more to the patriarchal economy idea?
Yes, the idea is to emphasize that there is a global culture that is based on hierarchy and authority and centralization and concentration of power and money and knowledge. And this is typically a patriarchal culture. And what we are talking about is a democratic culture, one that does away with corporatocracy and one that promotes people to be the self-managers of their own development, individually, family-wise, collectively, nationally, as peoples, and humanity as a whole. This is what we're talking about in that book. If you see the introduction, we say that we must promote the values of the feminine, which have to do with welcoming difference and acknowledging difference as a principle of life and promoting the complementarity of those who are different from one another as wealth, and realizing that the more we are different, the more we complement one another and be wealthier than individually. So these are ways of breaking down patriarchal culture and promoting what we call a machistic culture, which is basically democratic and participatory.
You know, those are very powerful ideas. And you are in Rio during the conference. Are you going to have an opportunity? Will your community be able to, you know, the voices of solidarity economy, et cetera, be able to have a voice at the conference? Will you be given some sort of floor? Will you be able to speak?
We prepared a letter in this meeting, Latin American Caribbean regional meeting of the Intercontinental Network. The letter is going to be presented in the official conference, but we have little hope that it will be taken seriously by those who are promoting the green economy. It doesn't mean, however, that we are giving up, because what matters to us is not to wait for those in power to make changes. We, at the grassroots, we are the ones who have to create the new inside the old, without waiting, and to signalize, to sign, to warn the world that another world is possible right now. It's not a project for the future. It is a reality that's happening locally and regionally and nationally in some spaces already. And so it's no utopia anymore. Mm-hmm. It is already going on. And also we promote the idea that without changing ourselves and living according to our principles, trying to live by the ways that we wish the world to become, making witness with our behavior and modes of relationship of what we believe should be humankind, unless we do that, unless we change ourselves, we're not going to have new institutions, because we will be old subjects, and the institutions will get old very quickly, as we have seen in most parts of the world, when socialist parties win governments or labor parties become government.
So it has to come from the people.
Now, may I just mention one last thing, and that is, last year we launched a book in the United States called A Mother's Cry. It was published by Duke University Press.
Mm.
And it was written by my mother, Karen, who was an interpreter, living 23 years in the United States. She was a key person to help me freed from prison during the military dictatorship. This book is being used in universities that have Latin American study centers. So if your listeners are interested, they could perhaps acquire this book and learn a bit more about what Brazil has been, and my own story might inspire them as well.
The title of the book is A Mother's Cry, and it is written by Marcos Arruda.
The author is Lina Pena Satamini.
Oh, okay.
My mother.
Yes. Okay. Forgive me. It's, you said it was your mother who wrote it. Would you give our listeners your mother's name again?
L-I-N-A.
Lina.
P-E-N-N-A. And Satamini.
Lina.
And the book is A Mother's Cry. There is an introduction by a professor of Brazilian history at Brown University, James Green. And there is an epilogue, an autobiographical epilogue, which I wrote.
It sounds like a really fantastic book. And Professor Marcos Arruda, it's an honor to have you on the phone here in an interview with Shift Shapers, and you are really doing an honor for our listeners. And it's actually very late at night in Brazil right now that we're talking, and
yeah.
I really appreciate every moment of your time that you've given us.
Thank you very much, and if you ever need other sharing, please call me again. Thank you, and all the best for your listeners and yourselves.
Thank you again. All righty, have a great night.
Yes, that book is A Mother's Cry. It's by Lina Pena Satamini, and it is available through a number of book outlets. It's about Marcos Arruda, and it's about how his mother was instrumental in getting him out of prison when he was arrested and tortured by the military dictatorship in Brazil. You've been listening to the first hour of Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio. I am your host for this hour, Daniel Kirbine. And the second hour is going to be hosted by Ricardo Quiroga, and he will be also interviewing Dr. Arruda in Spanish. And we will also be hearing from Maria Paula Bertolini, who is a biologist in the jungles of South America. So that is coming up during the next hour. Thank you for listening.
Intersecting in many times and places. We give thanks.